Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna on News Talk.
Now, International Day of Happiness took place this week, and I feel I have the perfect guest for us on this topic. She is speaking this weekend at Weekend of Mistakes. It returns to Hay Castle in the UK with an incredible lineup of writers, thinkers and podcasters to explore not only history's greatest missteps, but explore one of the most pressing questions of our time. How can we be happier? Well, Emma Slade is the first Westerner to become a Buddhist nun in Bhutan and is a key figure in the Gross National Happiness Project, a leading advocate for integrating well-being and happiness into economic policy. She joins me on the line now. Emma, you're very welcome.
Oh, thank you very much.
So, Emma, people might be thinking, economics and happiness, how do they mix? But your life literally has been that. You started out in finance.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, I was a senior financial analyst, mainly based in Hong Kong.
And what brought about change in your career?
Oh, so I had a kind of extraordinary situation of being held hostage at gunpoint in Jakarta on a business trip, actually. And obviously that was a huge experience and made me reevaluate really what I wanted to do with my life. And much as I absolutely adored analyzing economics and markets, and it's a very kind of exciting world to be in, I felt that I'd probably move to a place after that incident where I wanted to do something perhaps more deeper, more meaningful, and something kind of more peaceful as well.
Is that when Buddhism and yoga came into your life?
Yes, although I'd always been interested in Buddhism. I think the, you know, if you see a statue of the Buddha meditating, I think many people can feel, oh, that looks interesting, it looks peaceful, and I, you know, I wonder what he's doing in a way. And I think even in the 70s, I'd seen some books and statues of Buddhas, and I'd always been intrigued as to the state of mind of a Buddha.
And I think we all sort of have that in our minds, that to live like a Buddhist monk is to live a very peaceful life. But most people think that's not accessible to them. But you made the journey to Bhutan. Tell us about that.
Yeah. Yes. And I think that actually, you know, being a Buddhist monk, female monk, is just a really wonderful thing. It's not without its challenges, but it's definitely the right path for me. It's not the right path for everybody in terms of becoming a peaceful human being who makes a contribution in this world. I think you can do that from many walks of life, but you need the intention to do it. You need the wish to do it and then know how to put it into action. It's just lucky as a monk because a lot of your time is spent looking at that intention and then trying to act well and authentically, you know, with whatever you do. And obviously, as a monk, we get less involved in daily worldly activities, which take up a lot of people's time, can often cause a lot of anxiety and a lot of confusion for people. So we're lucky that we're not so involved in that area. So that is really a gift. But I do believe that it's the possibility of every human to find their own way to be peaceful and to feel meaningful in this world.
So what are some of the principles of Buddhism that everybody could bring into everyday life?
Well, from a Buddhist point of view, in terms of being peaceful or a state of contentment, we would suggest that people need to think very carefully about what that means for them in terms of their material possessions, in terms of what they do in this world. So usually we get very caught up in the idea that more is better. And then we strive a lot to get more of stuff. And actually, it seems, even from an economic point of view, we know there's the law of diminishing returns. So actually, it's not true that the more you have, the happier you are. We can see that actually that doesn't happen. But somehow we still feel as if more is better, right? So I think looking at that idea and working out, okay, where does contentment lie for me? Where do I go, okay, I've kind of, this is enough for me now. Because saying this is enough now, I have what I need, is very empowering, and it tends to bring a very peaceful state of mind because you're not grasping for more. So that inquiry, that personal inquiry for everybody, I think is really worth doing. Then I think looking at the balance between stimulating activities in your life which tend to trigger our anxiety system, tend to trigger our flight and fight response. And times when we're valuing, times when we are relaxing and giving back to ourselves, and in what we would call the parasympathetic nervous system, the part of the nervous system which gives us that good feedback and we feel relaxed and we feel positive about ourselves. So I think it's very easy to get caught up in the sympathetic nervous system, and from that system we achieve a lot, but we also become very anxious. And often people feel time when they're not achieving is like wasted time. It's not particularly productive. They've got nothing to show for it. But for your being, your whole being and your inner landscape, times when you're letting yourself relax and feel connected to others, feel peaceful, breathe well, they're very important for our well-being, to be honest.
So can you take us back to that Emma who was at the top of her game in the financial world? You had that major life event, that traumatic event. How did you becoming a female Buddhist monk come about?
Well, I guess I did. First of all, I had to recover from a very traumatic event. And that I did a lot of, I had the opportunity to work with people who work with people who've been taken hostage. And that was very helpful in terms of integrating that experience. Because when you've had trauma, you don't really want to integrate it. You want to push it away. And that creates a lot of problems for the mind. So first of all, I had to recover from the trauma. But in the process of recovery, I still felt as if my body had a lot of the memories of the trauma in it. So kind of mentally, I'd come to terms with it, but my body still found my breathing system. It was still quite anxious, and I used to sort of jump out of my skin when people came up behind me, etc. So that was really the thing that made me think breathing and yoga. I need to do something with my body about this trauma. So, you know, I did a lot of yoga and became actually a yoga teacher, and that naturally led into looking at meditation, because meditation is actually part of yoga. And from there, the sort of interest in Buddhism became rekindled. And Buddhist practice really, I would say, specializes in meditation. When we look at the Buddha, we see him sitting down in a meditation posture. So that's how I ended up going to Bhutan, which is this Buddhist country, and where there's many, many meditators, specialist meditators. And I just have had the opportunity to learn from some of those now and, you know, take steps towards understanding meditation and its benefits. But I do say that meditation is not necessarily the only way for people to connect with their own well-being and find ways to peacefulness. So it's one option, but it's not the only one. So sometimes people feel meditation is not for them. But that just means there are other methods that help people feel more content, feel more peaceful, and feel they make a contribution in this world.
And then, as I mentioned, in 2022, you became the first and only Western woman to ever be fully ordained in the Himalayas itself, which was historic in Bhutan. 142
yeah.
nuns were given full ordination on a level equivalent to monks. So even though we've spoken about that idea of enough and not being so caught up in achievement, did you still allow yourself to feel the weight of that historic moment?
Yeah, I mean, it's important to stress that this was something that happened in Bhutan, and it's a huge step forward for, you know, the possibility for females within Buddhism. And so, as you say, we got the vows to place us on an equivalent with monks. And that is still quite rare in some Buddhist countries, and that may surprise people. So first of all, I want to say that Bhutan was amazing for doing that, and I was absolutely honored to be part of it. And it was an incredible event in the mountains of Bhutan, in the forests of Bhutan, with many flags and music and tapestries, and it was just the most incredible event to be part of. I think I just spent a lot of time pinching myself that I was there, because, you know, I'm born in England by the sea, and somehow I've ended up in the mountains of Bhutan with other nuns from Bhutan and Sikkim and Ladakh, and nobody looks like me, to be frank. You know, on a very basic level, nobody looks like me. And I'm having to take vows in the Tibetan language. And so I was mainly just like, how did I get here? How was this even possible in the span of a life, you know? Or, you know, if you think back of my days in Hong Kong in suits and heels, I mean, how did I end up here, you know? So I think it was mainly that I just couldn't believe it was happening. And I just felt really proud of Bhutan for taking this very brave step to do this for women. I just felt really proud of them.
And I know you have such a connection to Bhutan. You have your charity Opening Your Heart to Bhutan to help special needs children there. But I couldn't have you on without asking you about happiness. It's the topic of your speaking event at the weekend. What is your take on happiness?
So, you know, as a monk, it's a big question, right? Because mainly from our perspective, when people talk about happiness, and there's many books out there about it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, mainly people are talking about worldly happiness. You know, we're happy one moment, then we lose it the next. So most of the models of worldly happiness, whether we look at the happiness index in Bhutan or we look at the happiness index in Scandinavia, which is very interesting, they're trying to create a society conditions which make it more likely for a population to more consistently experience happiness. Things like good governance, social welfare, clean environment. So they're outer conditions. From a Buddhist monastic point of view, we really train that stable happiness comes from how we view reality. So that's where we do our meditation practice into the nature of reality. From a Buddhist meditation point of view, from a philosophical point of view, a lot of our unhappiness comes not from what's going on, but from how we see and how we perceive and we understand what's going on. It's all about your mind and how easily your mind is disturbed by things going on around you. And that's why we train our minds in meditation.
Well, I think you will have given people a lot of insight and also a lot of inspiration that life can change in ways that we never, never expect them. If you'd like to find out more about Emma and her work, you can go to emmaslade.com. Emma, it's been such a pleasure to speak to you. Thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna. Sunday morning at 8 on News Talk.